Good morning, everyone. Our reading today comes from 2 Kings, chapter 5, 1 through 15. Now Naaman, captain of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man with his master and highly respected, because by him the Lord had given victory to Aram. The man was also a valiant warrior, but he was a leper. Now the Arameans had gone out in bands and had taken captive a little girl from the island of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus spoke the girl who is from the land of Israel." Then the king of Aram said, "Go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel." He departed and took with him 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothes. He brought the letter to the king of Israel, saying, "And now as the letter comes to you, behold, I have sent Naaman my servant to you that you may cure him of his leprosy." When the king of Israel read this letter, he tore his clothes and said, "I am God to kill and to make alive, that this man is sending word to me to cure a man of his leprosy. But consider now and see how he is seeking a quarrel against me." It happened when Elijah, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes and sent word to the king, saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Now let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came and with his horses and his chariots and stood at the doorway of the house of Elijah. Elijah sent a messenger to him, saying, "Go and wish in the Jordan 7 times, and your flesh will be restored to you, and you will be clean." But Naaman was furious and went away and said, "Behold, I thought he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. Are not Abana and Phrophar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all of the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in a rage. Then his servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, had the prophet told you to do so some great things, would you have not done it? How much more then when he says to you, 'Wash and be clean'?" So he went down and dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. When he returned to the man of God with all of his company and came and stood there before him, he said, "Behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So please take a present from your servant now." You may be seated.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've went over this lesson several times in my mind, and there are some things that I still don't probably understand completely. When we look at this, lesson about Nahum the leper. I've put in the title, Replace Pride with Humility. One of the things that strikes me is that, and I'm going to say this again, but there's a purpose of which Naaman was told to do what he was told to do. It wasn't that there was going to be healing in the waters. You know, I looked at this and I thought, this is God's prescription to Nahum to be healed. And it wasn't the prescription of going into the water to be healed, but it was by faith. If he would have faith, if he would trust God. And so, you know, we may not be healed of a disease or a problem of sorts that we might have, but when we are baptized into Christ, it's not the water, but it's the obedient faith that makes the difference. God says it all, through Paul, he says all those that love the Lord, good will come from that. And so we got to look at it from that perspective. It may not be the healing of a disease, but it certainly would be a healing of our heart and our spirit. So the story of Naaman, I've heard it preached several times and for different reasons and different ways, and I'm probably going to give this lesson. Again, I want to talk with you, not at you, but I'm going to give you this lesson probably in a little different way, and I find it to be a very interesting circumstance. But at the same time, I think it holds some relatable parallels to the healing power of God through Christ when we follow his prescription. And again, that's not talking about being healed of something that's physical, although I do believe God heals for whatever his reasons are. But when we follow his prescription, we can experience this healing power of God for our spirit. Equally as interesting as I read this story is about this young girl who had been captured during one of the Syrian raids and put into service as a housemaid for Naaman's wife. We don't even know what her name is. The Bible doesn't tell us her name. Just says, some translation says young girl, some say young handmaid or housemaid. We don't know her name. All we know about her is her circumstances, and we learn a great deal about her character. Naaman was a very powerful figure in the Syrian army. He was a commander. He was one who held rank and authority. So he had people that were under him. He'd tell them what to do, and they would do it. They would follow him into battle. And he was a military man. He had great responsibility, and he was extremely trusted by the king of Syria. He was held in the highest regard and was considered great and honorable by the king of Syria. Otherwise, he wouldn't be in that position. He was a warrior. He was a man of valor. And he was a man that God used at times to elevate Syria in battle. So what happens to him is just not something that we expect. Or what he has is not something we expect. He had many achievements. He had many accolades. And that were due to him, but he was stricken with this one very savage disease, the disease of leprosy. Now, leprosy, as you know, particularly in Bible times, as I looked up leprosy, I didn't realize, but there are many forms of leprosy. Even yet today, there are still many forms of leprosy. We help sponsor a brother in India, Brother Ronnie Goodham, who they have a leprosy colony right there where they work with to teach them the Bible. And they're in a colony. They're not, you know, they don't go around throughout the community, so to speak. They're in a colony. They stay right there. Everything's brought into them. And so what we do know about leprosy, even back then and even today, that there is no known cure. I did read that you can, to kind of stave it off a little bit, there are antibiotics that you can take that kind of keep it staved off or in so it doesn't get worse. We learn in Leviticus chapter 13 that when the people of Israel would contract leprosy, that they had to alert people that they had the disease. So if someone was coming towards them, they had to yell out, unclean, unclean. Or if they were approaching someone, they would have to yell out, unclean, unclean, because it was so they could pass it on to someone else. And I read where a brother said that they some would wear a bell around their neck. And so they, as they approached, that bell would ring. Now, I don't see that in Leviticus 13, but perhaps they did. I don't know. But Naaman had all these wonderful attributes. Nevertheless, he is more likely remembered as Naaman the leper. This nameless young girl, she was ready and she was willing to be used for God for good, for God for good, or by God for good. This young handmaiden, as you read in there, and I don't remember exactly that your translation, Brother Larry, that you read from, but when I read in the New King James or the New American Standard, we learned that she did not speak directly to Naaman. I don't know why. Maybe there was a restriction that she couldn't speak to him directly, but she spoke to her mistress, her Naaman's wife. And whether he overheard that, I don't know. But what I do know, what I do believe and convinced of, is that she knew when she spoke to Naaman's wife that Naaman would get this communication. And she knew that he would get the message. But from her suggestion, from what she said, we can clearly see that she had a great faith in God. She believed in God. And she believed that Elisha was God's prophet. She had such great faith. I think we don't emphasize that enough, this humble housemaid, just how great her faith was. If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy. She was convinced, she knew that he would be healed. So the character and religious conviction of this young girl, despite being in captivity, you know, think about it. She likely had to leave everything that she ever had, if she even had much. Everything that she'd even ever known in her entire life, she left behind. That includes her family. And she went to serve someone that she didn't even know. Yet through it all and all her loss, she did not leave her faith behind. I think, and I thought a great deal about that, because some of us in our lives have had some severe adversity. And some of those times of adversity, I'm just going to talk about myself because I don't know you, but in some of those times of adversity, if I would have just thought about this young housemaid, this young girl, and I know my whole life was turned upside down, wasn't anything like I wanted it to be or expected it to be, if I would have just had her faith, if I would just remember her, how much more firm my hope in God would have been. because that's her circumstance. The world that she knew no longer exists. But she kept her faith in God, for he would heal him of his leprosy. Sure enough, one way or the other, we don't know exactly, it doesn't tell us, Naaman got the message. And I thought about this too, and I didn't put this in my notes, but I thought about Naaman. You know, he got this message, and he spoke to the king. Now, did he go to speak to the king because, you know, maybe I've got a little faith. Maybe this young girl is right. Is it faith? Or is he just simply desperate? I don't really know. I suspect maybe he did have a little faith, but there's a lot of desperation. Because we learn a little bit more about his character, we'll understand a lot more about where he was before he was cured. But think about this. Where would he be if this young girl had not spoken up? If she didn't have faith, where would he be? He would be, because leprosy is something that causes great misery to you as well. If it's all over your body, there's no place that you can lay down and be comfortable. There's no place you can sit and be comfortable. If it's on your feet and the bottoms of your feet, it's hard to stand. So his whole life, if she had not had this kind of faith, where would he be? He would be in constant misery. Constant misery. I don't know how severe his leprosy was. It doesn't really tell us. But I know it was severe enough that he needed help. He would have been in continued sickness, and possibly, perhaps, he would have died a miserable death. But when he spoke to the king wholeheartedly supported him. He wanted Naaman to go to see the prophet. So as we had read in our hearing, Naaman packed up a lot of things. And they were going to be gifts, as we learned. They were going to be gifts to be given, and that's kind of a traditional customary thing that they did. They would get gifts. But most importantly, he brought this letter from the king of Syria explaining why he was coming to the king of Israel. When he arrived and the king of Israel read this letter, and I'm going to paraphrase what I believe, just kind of looking at it from our standpoint and in our English thinking, he's thinking, hold on, what are you trying to pull here? You're trying to create some kind of chaos. You're trying to provoke a fight between my nation and your nation. Am I God that I can do these things? And it was customary for kings to speak to kings, but Nahum certainly would have been better off if he would have went and spoke right directly to Elisha. So what did the king do? He tore his clothes. Now, that's not something typically that we would do. But have you ever been frustrated at times, or you've been in distress and you took something that you had in your hand and you threw it to the ground? You ever done that? I do that from time. Bob, yeah, thank you, Bob. I'll take that as your confession. I have done it too. You get frustrated. Get mad at something. You ever work on a car, you're going to get frustrated. Or you work on something in your house, you get frustrated. And I kind of look at that perspective. You get distressed, and that distress causes you to do something. So you take whatever, that wrench or that screwdriver, whatever you got in your hand, you throw it on the ground real hard, and hopefully it doesn't bounce up and break a window. And I have seen that happen. But he tore his clothes. That's just not something we would do, but we would act out some way sometimes in distress. So that was an outward display of grief often. When they were grieving, sometimes they would tear their clothes. When they lost someone, they would tear their clothes. When they were angry, they would tear their clothes. When they were in distress, they would tear their clothes. That's just not something we would do. But I think in this case, it was a combination of feelings that the king of Israel was experiencing, but he was most likely alarmed. He had distress because he was afraid there was going to be a battle, and he didn't want another one. He did not want another battle. But it was a dramatic thing, and it came to the attention of Elisha, God's prophet, and he knew it was because of Naaman. He had heard about it, and he knew about it. So he told the king, and this is something that we would say, just relax. Just relax. Send Naaman to me. I'll take care of this for you. And I think that's kind of the person that Elijah was. He was a person that could calm things down. Just relax. When Naaman came to Elisha, he expected it to be simple. Elisha would do something simple. Yet, he also expected it to be with great pomp and circumstance. Great display, this healing. It's going to be something fantastic. But when he heard what he wanted him to do, he just immediately got mad. He became furious. He thought Elijah would come and he would say a few ceremonial words and pray to God on his behalf. And all that would meet the level of which Naaman saw himself. Done and done. Indeed, I said to myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and heal the leprosy. But that's not what Elijah did. What Elijah did was not what Naaman expected him to do. Yet isn't that sometimes what we think religion should be like? A few words, a little ceremony, and we're done. If nothing else from this lesson, what we see is that God will heal if we follow his prescription in faith. What was it that Elijah, God's prophet, prescribed? Has anybody been to the Jordan River? You ever put your foot in it? Or your up to your ankle, up to your knees? Up to your shoulders? I haven't either. I have not either. But he said, go and wash, dip, as some translations will say, go and wash and dip. And when I hear that, it makes me think that he's going to dip all the way in, all the way down. He's going to submerge his body and then come back up. Go and wash in the Jordan River, dip 7 times, and your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean. And trying to get this across so we see what Naaman was like when he heard this, because, you know, we know that he got mad. He was in rage. But what was his rage like? He was furious, and in his heart he exclaimed with just this overinflated sense of entitlement, don't you know who I am? Don't you realize who I am, what position I have? What, are you serious? You want me to wash? You want me to dip 7 times in this nasty river? Why not one of the ones that are 10 times cleaner? And he spoke that with a furious sense of sarcasm. Now, some would think that perhaps he would not want to dip in the Jordan River because it was a dirty river. Because of its condition, why would I go in that? It don't make any sense. But maybe it was something else. Maybe he felt that submitting to such, because that would make that was an extremely humble act that he would have to perform. Maybe it was because doing that was beneath him. That's beneath my position. Perhaps his refusal was based more on his own pride rather than considering it a dirty river. It was a simple act. It was a very humble act. And what's interesting, too, that his servants recognize that. Now, if he told you to do something great, you'd do that, wouldn't you? Well, why can't you do this simple thing? He wanted pomp and ceremony. But pride stood in the way of being washed and healed. Yet that's exactly what God's prescription dictated. You know, isn't it interesting, a thing about being humble, expressing humility in our, not just our relationship with God, but what he wants us to do. Isn't that an interesting thing? The Bible tells us that Jesus emptied himself. He was God on earth, but he emptied himself. He became humble to the point of death, giving his life. He got everything out of him and submitted himself to death on a cross. Even though he was prideful, one thing we do learn from this story is that Naaman, when you spoke to him in reason, he would listen. My father. And that's an approach that these servants used, showed great respect for Naaman and his position. It's such a simple thing. Don't let pride stand in the way of cleansing. So Naaman listened to these servants. And he followed exactly what God's description was. And he was cleansed like a newborn baby. His skin was like that of a newborn baby. There was no disease. He was cured. Elisha knew that Naaman was a proud man, and if he submitted to such a humble act, now listen to this, because this is basically the crux of the lesson. He knew he was a proud man. If he submitted to such a humble act, that pride would be replaced with great faith. Perhaps that's why Elijah described dipping in this River Jordan 7 times, to bring him down off this self-elevated pedestal. Now, how does that relate to us? Well, the story of Naaman, it really truly parallels the condition of those who are in the throes of the leprosy of sin. The act of baptism, which now saves, is so often rejected simply because the act is too humbling. Too many that are held captive by the folly of pride. However, the simplicity of the washing in the watery grave of baptism, washed clean by the sacrificial blood of the Lamb, is just what God prescribes. That's how we eliminate sin. It makes sense that one would reflect upon their sin, their life, and repent. Confess the name of Jesus who came to remove that sin through his shed blood and be washed and made clean in spirit. Yet mankind sets their own standard of salvation so that it equals in their mind the level of which they should be honored. What most will not do is surrender their pride to submit to God's way and commit to the humble prescription of cleansing through the blood of the Lamb. God's way, and we know it because we've witnessed it, does not offer pomp and parade. And many people believe that they, and I've seen it different ways that people come for salvation. I've seen different things that they do. When we baptize someone, it's pretty humble. It's not a lot of pomp and parade. It's not a lot of pomp and circumstance. It's a humble experience. It's humbling not only for the person being baptized, but it's very humbling for the people witnessing. It's such a simple act. And people reject that because of its simplicity. I think many want honor. However, God wants humility. This is a shorter lesson than I typically give, but I intended it to be that way. So today, you've heard the invitation call, really. You've heard the gospel call. We've talked about it in this lesson. That invitation, which I think is really interesting, something we need to reiterate every time that we offer Christ's invitation. It's from Him. It's from Jesus Himself. And it's a really simple process. Hear, you believe, you repent, you confess, and you are baptized for the remission of sins. A great debate about baptism right now. I don't know if you've seen any of it, but there's just a great debate about baptism. And a lot of people don't believe that baptism is where we have the remission of sin. Many believe it comes before that, but I think the Bible is so clear on that. Personally, I believe that. Be baptized for the remission of sin. So today, if you have not been baptized, don't let anything or anyone stand in your way. Now, if you are a child of God and you need the prayers of your brethren for any reason, know that we will gladly lift up you to God in prayer. So whatever we can do to help you this day, please let us know while we stand and while we sing.